down in Parag Zion Pasuk Taz, we already spoke about how Gidon, it's so hot, I'm already ahead, I'm already by Yiftach. Anyway, but Gidon, what ended up happening over here is he wanted to collect a smaller army than usual, right? So he ended up, from all the people that came with him, about 30,000 people that came with him, in the end he only had 300 people left, and the 300 people left, each one were given a chauffeur, and each one was given provisions for the road. It says in Pasuk Taz, who wasn't that night, by Yomer Elov, Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, Kum Reid B'machne, get down, go to the camp, because I have given the camp into your hands. Then Yerei Zalredis, if you're afraid to go down, Reida to Fura Narcha El HaMachne, I want you and Fura your Nar to go down to the Machne. We have no idea who Fura is. Fura does not appear anywhere else in Tanakh. There is no medrash about Fura. We don't know what he is. Pura, the word, somewhat means to pay back, maybe, but I don't know if there's an actual wording that you would say over here. Either way, he said, you should go with Pura Yernar down to the camp itself. You should listen to what they're saying. And afterward, you will be strengthened. And you should go down to the camp and tell them. He went down to the edge of the soldiers that were by the camp. Now here's the pshat over here. I mean, Gidon was not really worried. Obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had given him assurance that he was going to win. But this was something a little bit beyond normal. He's being asked to go to war with 300 men. Period. Not 1,000, not 10,000, not anything like 300 men against a huge army.
He's talking to God.
And there's no question. And he knew it. But Gino was just worried, like, how am I supposed to know how to even do this? What am I going to do? I mean, he wanted to know strategy. He wanted to know what to fight. Remember, Gino did not have Ruach HaKodesh the same way every other Navi did. It wasn't a pure Ruach HaKodesh because he didn't deserve it. That's what he set up above. He had a different type of Ruach HaKodesh where somehow he got these feelings. It's time to go to war. He got these feelings of what he wanted to do. Granted, he had Malachim, and that was for sure. We spoke about that before. But it's not the same way. He needed a sign because he wasn't yet ready for this type of a commitment. Okay? I'm sure we can understand something like that. But that was the idea behind it. Either way, Midian Bamalach Obane Kadim, Noflam Ema Karbe, they were falling down by the valley like locusts. Larov, that's how many there were. Ligmalem and Misporus, this Posukibes, there were no number of their camels. Kakol Sheryl Sfas, that young Larov, they were like the sand and the sea, that's how many there were. As Gidon came, they have to understand something. The people that were at the edge of the camp were usually the most powerful, because the people in the middle of the camp were the ones that were the weakest and needed the most protection. The ones at the edges of the camp were usually the most powerful and the most courageous, the ones who were working very hard on themselves. So it says that Gidon came, and a guy was telling his friend a dream. Behold, I dreamt a dream, and there was a basket of barley bread that was rolling around the camp of Midian, and it came out up until a tent, right? And then it says, right? It hit it down by Yipol, and it fell by the whole Ohel. Fell down from this little thing of bread. But Yamreyuva Yomer, and his friend translated the dream, and he says, "Well, Inzos built him Kharv Gidon ben Yoash. That's the sword of Gidon ben Yoash. Yisrael nosan olim biyadoas midyan v'skol machaneh. God must have put into his hands all of Midian and all the camps. Now these are the strongest of the men, and they're translating the dream, being scared of Gidon. Gidon obviously overheard this. This is clearly the message that they were supposed to hear over here. How is bread a symbol of Gidon? So in a way, it wasn't necessarily referring to Gidon. The word Salul really comes from Sully. It was burning hot from the fire. Okay? And normally, as the bread rolls, when it's hot, little pieces start breaking off it. Okay? That's what it should be. But this bread didn't lose any of its strength as it got smaller. So they saw that even though there were 30,000 people originally, now there are only 300, nonetheless, they kept their strength. It did not become any weaker whatsoever. So too, they thought that even though he was inferior, so to speak, he's barley and not wheat or anything like that, they were absolutely terrified of him. That's what it was. And that's the idea. And also, the Omer is also a reference to the Korban Omer, through the schus of the Korban Omer that was brought on Pesach, because it was just Pesach. That's why they were going to be saved. When he heard about the dream at Shibro in the translation, he bowed down, he returned to the camp of Yisrael, said, get up, God has put into your hands the camp of Midian, split up the 300 men. Mensh Roshim to three heads. He put shofars in the hands of all the Makadim, Rekim, Balapidim, Bezoch Hakadim, and then empty pitchers, and they put fire pill, and whatever it is, inside the Kadim. You should see it for me, and do what I do. I'm going to come to the edge of the camp, whatever I do, you do. But it's Kadim Bashofar, I'm going to blow on my shofar, me and everybody with me. You should blow on your shofars. You, going around the entire camp, and you should say, this should be for God, and this should be for Gidon. And that should be the idea of everybody should yell aloud, Lashem Elegidon, Lashem Elegidon. That's the idea. I have in this list over here, everybody gathered, Naphtali, Asher, and Zvulun, right over here by Mount Tabor. They went south to Ophrah, and eventually through Israel to Ein Harod. The Ein Mored, that area over there in Ein Dor, the Midianite camp was right over there. We're going to see they went straight down into that valley to be able to go fight them. That's what's going to happen over here. Lots of stuff to talk, be able to talk about over here. You should limit miracles as much as possible. I've said before that it seems like they didn't bring any weapons. I mean, if they had a shofar in one hand, and they had a pitcher and a, you know, with a flame in the other hand, where did they put their weapons? It's obvious that it could have been that they could have had a weapon attached to their side, and they were just running with their weapon attached to their side. It just seems weird that they didn't bring any real weapons with them. But there were 5 points to Gideon's strategy over here. Number one, attacking at night. Number two, dividing into three different companies so that they would think that they were being surrounded. Number three, the horn and the torch would represent divisions. And people would think it's not just one guy. They think it's a whole division that's with him. One man was holding a horn and a torch. He was leading his whole division. That's what they would think. Number four, the pitchers, breaking the pitchers at the same time, and all of a sudden all these lights came out of nowhere, would scare the Midianim. All at once, aside from all the noise that would happen. The fifth, that they would all shout together, mentioning God and Gideon. He knew what kind of terror his own name struck because he heard it from the dreams. So therefore he knew that saying the word Lahashem Elegidon would scare the living daylights out of the Midianim. So it was a 5-pronged strategy to be able to go out at war. So it says, Gideon and the 100 men that were with him came. At the edge of the camp, Rosh Hashmaras Tikkun, right in the middle of the beginning of the middle watch. Right, the point of that was that some of the guards would already be getting up, while other people were still asleep. It was just in the middle of the night; people are exhausted. Okay, so Pasuk Chaf over here, Pasuk Yitzchak. I'm sorry. Achakemi Kimos Hashem. They were about to wake up the guards. The Yiskuba Shofros and Apot Hakanim Shir Yadam. They immediately blew in the shofars, and they all the pitchers that were in their hands broke. Basically, Shlosh Zal Rashim Bashofros. The three heads blew on their shofars. The Yishru Akadim, and they broke all the pitchers. The Yachzik Biad Smolam, the Lapidim. Their left hand held the flames. The Biad Yamino Shofars, and their right hand was the shofar. Let's go. The Yikru Chayav Lashem Legidim, and they called out loud. Chayav Lashem Legidim. The Amdi Ish Tatov Saviv Lamachna. They all, every man stood in their place around the camp. By Yaretz Kol Machna, by Yariv Yenusu, and all of the camp started to run. They just screamed out loud and they started running. By Yisku Shlosh Meos Hashofros, and they blew on the 300 shofars. The Yasam Hashem Etzchayav Ish Bereihu. Each man was hit by their sword of their friend, and all of the camp, they went all the way down to Beis Hashita, they went all the way down to Beis Shita by Saresa until Sfas Evel Mechola Atabos. If you look over here, they went all the way down to Beis Shan. It was all the way down. They went all the way down, fleeing down through this area right over here, right by the Jordan River. That's where they went to get to the other side. It's like the chicken, right? That's the idea behind it. People were killing their own companions along the way. If you look over here, Tabas is right there, Beis Shan, Yivlaim, you know that Saraya is all the way down. They ran a long way that whole way down. Beis Shita is right over there. It's crazy how far they went down over there. Okay, that's the idea behind it. Vayitzo'ek Ish Yisrael, Minaptali, Min Asher, Min Kol Menashe. All the men of Yisrael, they started gathering from Naphtali, Asher, Menashe. Vayirdevuach Rei Midian, they chased after Midian. Messengers were sent, right, by Gideon throughout all of the mountain of Ephraim, Lamor saying, Redu li cross Midian, go out and meet Midian, right, the lichtu lahamis amayim ad beis bara, right, go and capture the area of the water up until beis bara. Do we have beis bara over here? Do you see beis bara? I don't see it around here. must be somewhere around there, but whatever it is. Go all the way down and go capture it. That's what he said to Ephraim. Right? They say, Yarden and the Jordan River. Ephraim, go take the Jordan. Make sure they don't get to the Jordan. But he said, Kol Yish Ephraim, Yokadu is a mine. They went down. They captured the water at Beis Barav, at the Yarden, that whole area. Yokadu Shnei, sorry, Midian is Oreb as the Eve. They captured the two officers of Midian, Oreb and Zave. Their names were Raven and Wolf. That's awesome, like Indian names. The Yarigu is Oreb, Ur, Sur Oreb. They killed Oreb, fittingly, on the rock of Oreb. That's why it was called that. That's Eve Oreb, Yekev Zave, and the grapes of Zave. But here to Midian, they've chased them all the way into Midian. Marosh Oreb is Eve, Vio, Gidom, Eve, Liar, and they brought the heads of Oreb and Zave to Gidom. This is Ephraim, brought their heads over around there. That was the idea of what they were going to do. Unbelievable end of the parak. That's how they died, and that was that. So, parak chas, this is one of the best prakim. One of the greatest prakim that you'll see in Navi. But in the love, Isha Ephraim, Madavar Azal Sisolanu, said the man of Ephraim, the men of Ephraim, they said, what is this that you've done to us? Levilti Kros Lanu, that you did not call us. Ki Alakta, when you went to go fight against Midian. They fought strongly with him. They said, well, what's wrong with you? How could you not have asked us to come? It was a ridiculous time. Why was this a ridiculous time? Because there were only 300 men. Gideon had already let go of 25,000 soldiers. They had all gone home because they had done sins or this and that and the other. They had all gone home. And there were 300 men in his army. And if I was getting up and said, well, you didn't invite us in the first place. No. And Hashem wanted an army that was very, very small to defeat them. That's what he wanted. What's the Shiloh of Ephraim? So Gideon wanted to. Gideon could have argued with them right back and said, who the heck are you guys? Granted, you killed Oregon Zay, but come on. Like, obviously, this was not the plan. That's not what we were going to do. They don't want to lay him. But Gideon said to them, how could I be like you? The small grapes of Ephraim, the unripened grapes of Ephraim, are better than the harvests of Abiezer, referring to everybody else in Menashe. In your hands, God gave the officers of Midian as Oreb Zeev. What could I do like you? Then they weakened and they said, okay, whatever it is. I mean, Gideon could have said anything he wanted, but he was calm. Gideon was an Anav, just like his protege, Moshe Rabbeinu. He was a pure Anav and did not want to fight them if he didn't have to. He said, that's the idea behind it. He said, listen, it's not that big of a deal. Some say it was the exact opposite, that he was trying to say to them that you guys only took the gleanings, okay, Ephraim? Like, you could not have fought against the major guys. You only took the guys that were too weak to fight us and ran away from us. We fought the major battle. You guys fought, like, the garbage battle.
But they're warring tribe.
What?
I said they're a war.
They are a warring tribe. There's no question. But it's just like, come on. They're still not in comparison. Vayavu Gido Yardeno. Gideon came to the Jordan River over who? He went along with 300 men that were with him. They were tired and they were still chasing him. They said to Anshe Sukkos. Now here's Sukkos on the map. Sukkos is right there. They crossed over the Jordan. They were now over here. They came to Sukkos. They're going to get to Penuel right over there. They're going to chase them all the way over there. Okay? So they were still chasing after. They said, give us a little bit of bread. The people that are with me. They're very tired. Ben Ezra wrote the Akari Zevach and Salmuna Malka Midian. We're chasing after Zevach and Salmuna, the kings of Midian. They were saying, "Sukkos achas Zevach and Salmuna atzvi adacha kinezel Zevach alachan." What? Do you already have them? Those officers of Midian that we should give you bread. In other words, like, what if you lose? Right? Then we're going to be killed. Therefore, when God does put Zevach and Salmuna in my hands, I'm going to thresh your flesh, that's awesome wording, with thorns of the desert and with thistles. Okay? You're going to die. Clown, I believe, is the line over here. It's going to be a horrible death because you just did that for me. All he was asking was for food. It was unbelievable that Sukkos was that callous and that cruel that it would not give them anything at all. That they weren't moved at all by what was happening. Then he went to Penuel. He said the exact same thing. They answered the way that Anshe Sukkos said. I'm not sure Penuel. They said to the people of Penuel, saying, when I return in peace, I'm going to destroy this Migdal. I'm going to destroy this tower.
These are in Gaia, right?
No, these were both Jewish cities. Now, it's funny, because the first one he said, I'm going to thresh your flesh, right? I'm going to kill you guys. Over here he just said, I'm going to break down the tower. What's the difference between them? The people of Penuel had not suffered as much as the other cities, and the reason why is because they had a tower in which they took refuge. They believed in their tower. tower. In tower we trust, is what they used to say. As opposed to Sukkos, Sukkos only believed in whatever they could do. And if Midian was in charge, they were going to have to be in charge. Refusing to help Gidon, they weren't saying we want to help Midian. They were saying we're relying on ourselves. So they weren't high Misa by rebelling against Gidon the way that Sukkos was. They were rebelling in the other way. They were saying, listen, we're going to continue to resist Midian as well. We're just not going to do what you do. We're going to be in something different. That's the idea. They trusted in their tower. So what did Gidon say back to them? I'm going to destroy your tower. That's what he said back to them. They were in a city called Karkor, about 15,000. I don't believe I have a city called Karkor here. No, I do not. So wherever Karkor is, that was all that was left from all the camps of the east. 120,000 soldiers died that day. That's a ridiculous number. Absolute ridiculous number. 15,000 were left altogether. Unbelievable. Gidon went to where the tents were, Mikeron Lenovach, on the east of Noach, Yogbaha, the Yaksmachmen Bamachna Yabetach. Right? He killed everybody in the camp. The camp was secured at that point. They ran away. They chased after them. Ayuko, the Shnei Malkin Midian, they captured the two kings, and Zevas Amunuvachomachna Charid, and they put everyone in a panic. Now, I don't know why it says Malkin Midian over there. Didn't it say before? It seemed before that Zevach and Salmuna, oh, it did say Malchi Midian all the way up in Pasuk Dalet. That's weird. I don't know if they were actual Malachim or if they were just governors. All right, either way, regardless, they put the entire everybody was in a panic at this point. Everybody was in a panic. The pshat is that the way Gino was able to do this, he found a shortcut. He went another way. In other words, Yogbaha is right over here. He went through a little area. Didn't expect them to go on, and that was the idea behind it. The other camp never assumed that Gideon would continue to run after them once it turned into night. I mean, they had been fighting all night long, Gideon. Right? They chased into the day until the very next night, and they hadn't received any food. There was no way they were going to continue to chase after them, so that's why the Midianites like calmed down a little bit. They said, like, alright, it's not that big of a deal. But they didn't realize Gidon took this as a holy war and would not stop until he was finished. He refused to go anywhere. It says in Pasuk Yud Gimel, right, he had come back from the battle right before sunrise. Some people say the Charas refers to a place, Malei Charas. It seems, though, that it was before sunrise that they came back, and that was the idea of what
most
it was supposed to be.
Most people here are commenting, you know, it's the sun, it's
yeah,
time of day, not
and that's
place.
The idea behind it. Charas, Choras, is supposed to be that idea over here. Okay, that was that. So he captured a kid from the people of Sukkos. When he asked him, sorry, Sukkos, he wrote down 77 men who were the officers of Sukkos and the Zakanim. I said this before, I'm going to say it again. If somebody would ask you for the 100 people that are in the Senate, would you be able to name 10 of them? 10 senators?
It's different.
Why is it different?
Because 77 small, and you knew they were prominent.
Okay,
you
don't have to. Chicago. Can you name me 5 people in the government of Chicago? Rahm Emanuel and what?
If somebody cared, yeah.
That's
people cared.
He found a random kid.
No.
So you found the one kid that knew all of them. Well, I'm sorry, Benjamin, what? Some aldermen. How many aldermen do you know?
I don't know. Four.
Listen. Okay, that's fine.
Listen.
Yeah, go ahead, dude.
In the Holocaust, I was just watching a video of my grandfather.
Uh-huh.
When they came to his town in Poland, and they gathered all the Jews, and there were, you know, 1,500 Jews
yeah,
he could probably name all the Jews in the air in his shtetl.
I hear that.
You know?
I guess I can hear that. The rabbis of the city. If you have the rabbis of the city.
It's a different mentality.
I hear what you're saying. If somebody would ask me the rabbis of Chicago, say, name for me the rabbis of all the shuls in Chicago, I probably could come up with about 40 or 50 of them.
Yeah.
You're right. That would be a good call. I don't know the governing officers, and maybe Benjamin's right in that. If
there's
you needed
layers
to know it, you would know it.
Yeah.
But the leaders, I would probably know. And maybe that's what he's asking. Maybe he was asking for the rabbis that were living in Sukkos. Who are your spiritual leaders? I don't care about your physical leaders. Who are your spiritual leaders? Maybe that's what he's asking. But he wrote down 77 men. By Hebel Anshi Sukkos, they came to the people of Sukkos by Yomer. Hine zebach v'tzalmuna asher chiratem osi. Here are zebach v'tzalmuna that you made fun of me. Leimor achas zebach v'tzalmuna atav yadecha kinitin alan shecha yefim lechem, that I should give your men who are weary bread. V'yigaz ziknei ha'ir v'es kotzi ha'mibur v'es barkonin. And he took the elders of the city, as well as the thorns and the thistles that are in the desert, yodem ha'matan shi sukos, and he made the people of Sukkos know them. Okay? He let them be known. And he took the elders. There's migdal p'nuol nosat, and then he knocked down the migdal p'nuol, but yaro g'tan she'ir, and he killed certain people of the city as well. He definitely gave them rebuke. There's no question that he gave them rebuke in Musar first to tell them against everything. Aside from the fact, it's forbidden to rebel against the leader, especially if the leader is leading B'nai Yisrael in such a way they were not allowed to do such a thing. That's without a question whatsoever. Some say he beat them with the thorns. Some say he threw them on the thorns. Some say he literally killed them with thorns. He took sharp enough thorns and then cut their throats. That's the idea behind it. Others say the Yeda is he let them know how bad of a sin it was. They shouldn't do it ever again. That's the idea behind it. Others say it's to cause suffering. Others say, okay, something like that. That's the idea behind it. Anybody who tried defending the tower was killed. Those are the people of Penuel that were killed. He said to Zevach Zamuna, where are the men that you had killed in Tabor? Right? Did you do it or did you not do it? They said, the way you look is the way they looked. Echad Ketor B'nei HaMelech. They looked like sons of the king. Okay, that's that. He was wondering if his brothers, Gidon's brothers, were killed when they had went out to war earlier. And Zebach Zamuna said, yes, we killed people that looked exactly like you. So now that he has the obligation of Goel Adam, so now he has to kill them. Vayomar, Achai B'nei Imihem. They are my brothers, the sons of my mother. Chai Hashem, Luach Yisam, had you only let them live, Osam, them, Lo Ra'ati Yisam, I would not kill you now. I mean, it's possible that Gidon would have had to kill them anyway, but he did have the obligation of avenging his brother's blood, the Goel Adam. So he did do that, and that's exactly what he did. But
the Goel Adam applied even without the Beis Hamikdash and all that?
It should apply even nowadays, which is we don't do it, but yes, a Goel Adam still applies. Also, I don't know too many people who, you know, have a situation of Goel Adam. How many times do you hear that? I finally found a person. I was giving a share to a bunch of women, and I said, does anybody know anyone who killed someone accidentally? And one person said, yes, I do, actually. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you're the first person in like 50, I don't know how many shirim I've given that I've asked that question. And somebody said, yeah, I actually know somebody who died accidentally. But it doesn't count by a car accident. It's like Goel Adam is like an impossible situation. By Yom Eliezer Bechoro, this is in Pasuk Chof, said to Yeser is Bechor, Kuma Rogosim, get up and kill them. He would not unsheath his sword because he was afraid he was still a nar. The purpose of what Gideon was trying to do was that he wanted to give him an opportunity to take over, and instead of the Goel Adam doing it, somebody who was there to show that he was going to be the next leader of Klal Yisrael. When his son Yeser refused to do it, he understood that Yeser was not going to be the leader after him. Now, there is no shofet whose son takes over and leads the Bnei Yisrael as a shofet after him, excluding maybe Avimelech next. And this is maybe the reason, except maybe Avimelech next, and we'll see, but he wasn't really a shofet. But Yeser would have been the next shofet had he done this, but he refused. He wouldn't. That was a sign. He accepted the decree, God's decree. He was very sad. You should kill us. Like a man is his strength. Okay, we don't want to suffer more by having a little kid trying to kill us. We don't want to be insulted. You kill us instead. You have to get my arrogance. What do you mean they didn't have? Technically, he does. The Goel Adam is any close relative. It does not have to be a brother. So even your uncle, in theory, the nephew could do it. So in theory, and plus, the Goel Adam is allowed to appoint a shliach. Even Beis Din can appoint a shliach as a Goel Adam if they need to. There is such a thing as setting up a shliach if they need to. Either way, it says, and he took the crescents that were on the necks of their camels. Apparently, that was something like some type of Avodah Zarah that they had. So the people of Bnei Yisrael said to Gidon, rule over us. You, your son, your grandson's kids, you have saved us from Midian. I'm not going to rule over you. I'm not going to do it. My son's not going to do it. God is going to do it. He knew that his firstborn was not going to do it. He understood that other people were there yet, and he knew that this was God's will, but they were not ready yet to have a king. It was not yet time to be able to have a king. Aside from the fact that he's from Menasha. But this was unbelievable humility on Gideon's part. I don't believe there was ever another person who was told to be king and said no.
Are they actually saying be king?
Moshe.
Mishol. What do you mean by Moshe Rabbeinu? Oh, you mean from God, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's already another level. I agree with you, but that's another level where people came up and said, you should be king.
I don't think it's a king. No. It's just rule.
But ruling over us, Moshe, is even greater than a king. A king can force himself upon the nation. A Moshe is even better because the nation is choosing him. That's the idea, yeah. And we spoke before that the Anivus of Gideon was like Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's the exact same thing over here. That, yeah, you're 100% right, that he was rewarded for this, by the way. His reward for not accepting the kingdom was that Avimelech was permitted to rule for 3 years. That was the reward that he was given because of this. It says in Pasuk Chav Dalet, Gideon said to them, I'm going to ask you for something. I want one ring of this plunder. And they all had these nose rings, these gold nose rings, because they're all Yishmaelim. He wanted all that gold. He could have demanded it, but he didn't. He just wanted them to donate it. We will surely give it. They spread out a shirt. Each person gave out a ring of gold. He got 1,700. I don't even know what it is. Dinar of gold. The weight of gold was 1,700 something. Aside from the crescents and the netifos are like the ornaments and the purple, you know, clothing that were on the kings of Midian. And aside from all the necklaces that were on the camels' necks, Gideon took all that gold and he made it into an ephod, an apron. And he set it up in a city of Ophrah. But the people started to stray after it. And it became a snare for Gideon and his house. Okay, here's the idea. Gideon had an idea. What he wanted was, he knew that there was one stone of the Shvatim that did not make it onto the Choshen, and it was Menashe's stone. Yosef was on the Choshen, and Yosef was represented by Ephraim, that was the Shoham, the Onyx. That was supposed to be Ephraim's stone. But Menashe never had a stone. So he thought, what I want is to be able to make a replica of the garment of the Kohen Gadol and make his own stone on it for Menashe. That's what he wanted, to make another garment with that instead. It's a very, very strange thing, but he wanted it as a representation that Menashe still had a chelek in Klal Yisrael. That's one thing.
No kidding. Half the tribe was in Eretz Yisrael.
Some say it was even crazier, that it was able to answer questions the same way the regular Choshen and Ephod were able to answer questions, and that it literally worked like magic. It didn't work through Ruach HaKodesh the way the Urim Tumim and the Kohen Gadol was able to use it. It worked through magic. But it was another thing they were able to do. Others say it was intended merely as a memorial. That's it. But there's no question that everybody agrees it is forbidden to make these garments outside of the Mishkan, forbidden to make such a garment, forbidden to use magic, that's without a question, and it was a problem that he put this thing on. Others say that this became his badge of office, that he refused to become king, but he still wanted to be a leader, he wanted a constant reminder, that was the idea behind it, but there's no question this became a stumbling block. People started to venerate it, they started to use it as like, this is our God, and once they saw the ephod, they used it as that, and because of this thing that he had made, Gideon's sons were eventually killed. That was their punishment, that they were all going to be killed. Yeah.
So to speak, this is Gideon hitting the rock.
Yeah, very good. With a rock. Looking for a rock. That's exactly what it is.
Because if they equate it with Moshe, and then Moshe's mistake was the rock.
Very
this
good.
Is Gideon's mistake.
Not think of it that way, but that is 100% true. That's the rock. This is the punishment that he got. And then it says,
and Moshe's children weren't leaders either.
No, they were not. They were refused leadership. But Yikonam Midian with Nebin Israel. Yeah, should I add that on? That's another similarity. But Yikonam Midian with Nebin Israel. Midian was humbled in front of Israel. Although Yasul says Roshim, they were not able to lift up their heads anymore. But Tishbet Aratar Boim Shalom, they made Gideon for 40 years. years away and was quiet in the years of Gidon. So Yerubal ben Yoash, Gidon, went and he lived in his house. So Gidon had 70 children who came from him. He had many wives. He had many, many wives, right? And 70 children. That's a lot. That's like Osama bin Laden style. I'm sorry, Binyamin, we should have enough battery to be able to go. His Pilegesh that he had in Shechem, she also gave birth, right? She also gave birth to a child. And the child's name was Abimelech, right? So even him, there was one other child. So he had a concubine who lived in Shechem, and that was that. Some say it was improper for him to have such a huge family when he should have been working on the needs of the community as opposed to working on his own interests, right? Others say this is proper because he had tons of children and that all these people were pure and righteous and they were there. That's okay. Thank you. But either way, that's another way that it was proper from David. So it's not locus over here.
There's been, back in those days, there was no limit, wasn't there?
A limit for how many wives he had. No, no question. Because he wasn't a king, he could have as many wives as he wanted. 18 was only for a melech. This is obviously not for a melech, and that's okay. Right, so he was allowed to have it. But it was so improper that he should have been concentrating on the people rather than on making his whole huge family. Remember, at the time, his oldest son was very young. His oldest son, Yetzer, was a young kid at the time. That was the idea behind it. It says in the bottom, in Lamed Beis over here, Vayomez Gidon ben Yoash b'seva tovo yikaver b'kever Yoash avi b'ofra avia Ezri. It says that Gidon ben Yoash died in an old age, and he was buried in the kever of Yoash, his father, Ophrah Avia Ezri, by Yoash, in Ophrah, right by Avia Ezri. He was right around there. So it happens to be that he died when he was old, and he became corrupt when he was old. That he had created the stumbling block that eventually everything happened, or whatever it was, but this is what happened at the end of his life. Laman Gimel says, Vayikasher Mace Gidon. When Gidon died, Vayashuv ben Yisrael, Vayizmach, where he had Ba'alan. So ben Yisrael then went and they strayed after the Ba'alan yet again. Vayisimulam Baal Bris label him, and they made Baal Bris to be a god. Remember this name, because we're going to see it quite often, Baal Bris. Okay, but remember, we talked about all the Ba'alan that we had. We had the Baal Zvul, we had Baal Tzfon, we had Baal Pa'or. Now here we have a fourth Baal Bris. Vayizachu ben Yisrael, Hashem Elohim. They did not remember Hashem, their God, Amatzels, Amiyako, Eden, Misaviv, who saved them from all around. They did not do a chassid with the house of Yerubal, Gidon, like all the good that he had done with Bnei Yisrael. That at that point, there was nothing good. Remember, any time that it says the word Vayihi, shouldn't say every time. Vayihi can mean good or bad, but in Vayihi, it could be voy vehe. That there was woe to Bnei Yisrael because of what had happened, that the temptation to believe in these idols was so great that that's what ended up happening. Obviously, these people did not believe in this, but that's the end of Parashas. Yeah.
I mean, that's really his legacy.
100%. The legacy, unfortunately, is that he started something that could have worked and then went straight down. We're going to see Abimelech is really his legacy, and unfortunately, this is the worst chapter in all of Shoftim, and then it gets worse as time goes on. Let's go through Vayelech Abimelech and Yerubal Shechem. So Abimelech, the son of Yerubal, went to Shechem. El Achei Imo, to the brothers of his mother. Remember, his mother was a Pelegesh.
But she was from Shechem. Why is he
going from Shechem? Meaning, he lived with Gidon, right? But he lived with his 70 brothers from his father's house. He no longer wanted to be with them because he was a son of a Pelegesh. He wasn't the same as a regular son. So he went back to the brothers of his mother who lived in Shechem, his uncles. Vaydaber Elemo Kol Mishpachas Beis Avi, and he spoke to them as well as to his whole family, Emo. Saying the following, speak to all the people of Shechem. I don't want to say this directly, but say it indirectly. Why is it better for you guys to have a democracy of 70 men, the sons of Yerubal, in charge of you? Isn't it better if you have one man in charge of you? I want you to remember that I am your flesh and blood. Okay, I want you to remember that I am part of your family, and therefore I should be chosen over anything else. Notice, by the way, it says Abimelech ben Yerubal. Yerubal, we said, was a good name and a bad name. Yerubal was a good name because he fought against the Baal. But Yerubal also was a bad name that he was impetuous. He was willing to go up and do what he wanted at any time because this is it. This is what I have to do. That was Gidon's name for Abimelech. Abimelech is not Abimelech ben Gidon. Gidon is a good name. He's Abimelech ben Yerubal, that he did everything in the wrong way. That's the idea behind it, that it could have been such a curse in such a way. Humility that Gidon had can be a bad thing as well. And unfortunately, that's what led to what ended up happening with his son, Abimelech. Now, Listen to this idea over here. The city of Shechem has been a source of trouble for Jewish people throughout history, beginning in the time of the Avos, right? We all know that when Yaakov and Esau were little children, Rivka went out for a walk through the fields. Listen to this. They came to a cave, and inside they found the body of the wicked king Nimrod, when they were little kids. He had a crown on his head, and his hand was a sword with God's holy name written on it. This is against the Medrash that Nimrod was killed by Esau in his 15th year. Okay? Rivka took the crown and the sword and gave them to Yaakov. She took Nimrod's clothes and gave them to Esav. These were the holy clothes that Hashem had made for Adam when he had driven him out of the Garden of Eden. The same exact clothes. Okay? Still, the two brothers are not happy. Yaakov wanted Eretz Yisrael. Esav, right, was a fighter and a hunter. He wanted the sword, the miraculous sword that was given over to Yaakov. So when Yaakov asked him to sell him the birthright that would include the rights to Eretz Yisrael, Esav wanted the sword. And that's how it's not a davar shelo b'olam. He was asking for the Bechor. He wanted to buy the birthright from Esav. How do you buy a birthright? You can't buy a birthright. There's no price to such a thing. There's no way that a person can sell such a thing. But you could sell the rights to Eretz Yisrael for the rights to the sword that Nimrod originally had. That you were allowed to do, and there's something there. Yaakov consented to everything, but Esav was still, he wasn't so happy about it. He didn't want to relinquish all of Eretz Yisrael. So Yaakov agreed to give him one city. The city was Shechem. Which is why Esav owned the city of Shechem and still owns, so to speak, the city of Shechem, and it has always been trouble for the descendants of Yaakov from that point forward. Obviously, around that area is where Yosef was sold. Obviously, around that area is where people lost everything, like over here with Shechem. And obviously, there was Shechem Samarians, the Shomronim lived in Shechem. And that was the area where they lived, specifically because it was a city given over to Esav. Okay.
Did he quote that medrash from somebody?
It was all quoted from a medrash rabbi.
Nobody talks about it.
Crazy, isn't it? It's an unbelievable medrash. Usually they quote the medrash that Esav killed Nimrod and took the clothing. But nobody says anything about the sword. I've always heard that Yaakov had a sword that Esav wanted. I just never saw where it was from. That's the medrash, where it was always from. That's the concept of the medrash. Abimelech gave a lot of lies. There's no way that Gidon's sons, his 70 sons, really wanted to rule over everybody. There's no way. That's not possible. But the pshat is that it's obvious that they really didn't want to rule over anything at all. They were willing to be leaders because they knew they had to be leaders. But Abimelech took advantage of this situation. The brothers of his mother spoke to him in the ears of all the people of Shechem. It's called Rima Eile. All these words, everything that had happened. And they turned their hearts after Abimelech. They said, listen, he's our brother, right? Unlike them, they're not our brother, but Abimelech is our brother. They were called Balei Shechem because they considered themselves the owners of Shechem. They considered themselves the people that already were in charge of Shechem. They could do whatever they pleased. They didn't care about anybody else. They just did whatever they wanted. Yeah, Danielle, go ahead.
Like, oh, you guys want 70 people ruling over you in a democracy, or do you want me? I'm the greatest guy. That's kind of like, and they're like, oh, okay, sure.
I mean, you're right. It couldn't be. He must have given other things as well. It's obvious from later on, we're going to see, Abimelech did not buy his way in. He didn't even have money yet. We're going to see in the next Pasuk, in Pasuk Dal, Vayitnu lo shivim kesem mibeis baal bris, they gave him 70 silver pieces. Vayitzkor ben Abimelech anashim reikim opolkos v'yoko akrav. He bought men with it, empty-headed and impetuous, fickle men that would go after him. Reikim is because they had no social status, they had no morals, they didn't care what they were doing because they had nothing to lose. Literally mercenaries with no morals. Immoral mercenaries. And Pokazim were people that were unstable. They didn't believe in man. They didn't believe in God. They couldn't care about anything. They just would go to the highest bidder. So we see that he didn't even have money. Abimelech didn't even have money to buy out the position. He needed money to go rent out other people. So seemingly, and your question is awesome, how in the world could Abimelech have done this in the first place? It must be that Abimelech was still powerful. That he was still a strong man, must have been a very smart man, and must have done this in a roundabout way to which he convinced enough people that this was the way to go and this was the idea. I think that that's the answer, but it doesn't say anything otherwise and we don't have any indication. But it's got to be. He must have been smart, and we'll see later on that he does fight a war and he beats everybody. He's able to defeat all these cities, so it must be it's something like that. Okay. And Pasuk Hey, Vayavo Beis Aviv Afroso. So his father, he went to his father's house in Afron. Vayarog is Achiv Bnei Rubal Shivim Ish Alev Nachos. He was able to kill all of his brothers, the sons of Gidon, 70 men on one stone. Remember that it was on one stone. That's also an important point. And the only one left was Yosam ben Yerubal, the youngest one. He was able to survive because he hid. That's the idea of how he's going to go. There's no question that that was already silly. But the way he did it was, he said that they were doing wrong things, that they were trying to rule and nobody was allowed to rule. Should we go? Yeah, I think we should. Binyamin, hold on one second, okay? We're just going to go to a different room. Hold on one second.
Will you not mind if we're loud in here? Yeah. All right, thank you so much. Binyamin, you still with us?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Give me one second.
Here we go. Okay, we are up to Pasuk Vav over here. So right now, he thought that he had murdered all 70 of the children of Gidon, but he hadn't. He had killed 69 of them. He had started with Yeser, the Bechor, right? And he had killed everybody, but there was one that remained. His name was Yosam. Yosam was the only one that remained. By Yosfu, it says in Vav, Yosef called Baal Yishchem, Bechol Beis Milo, Baal Yishchem and Beis Milo, Yal Kemba, Yochel Yam Licho, Zab Yimelech, Melech, and Elon Mutzav, Asher Bishchem. They made him the king. Made him the king by Elon Mutzav, this certain tree, right, that was by Shechem. Now, they say that Elon Mutzav was the tree in which, here's the story, when the Shvatim came with Yaakov Avinu back from Lavan, and they had fought against the people of Shechem because what they had done with Dinah, they took some of the idols of Shechem and they had them on them. Yaakov Avinu told them that they could not enter by Yitzchak Avinu into his house with this Avodah Zarah, so they had to get rid of the Avodah Zarah that they had on them. So they buried all of the Avodah Zarah under a tree. That's a pasuk in the Torah. That tree was called Elon Mutzav, a tree of the Avodah Zarah, of this stuff that they had had. That tree was eventually, the idolatrous people of Shechem believed in that tree. They thought it was a tremendous power. And aside from all that, that the people that, the Shomronim, worshipped that tree. So that was a very powerful tree. There's no question that he was not the real king. In the end, we're going to see that it was by Yoshar that he ruled over them. But they made him as if he was a king, and that's the idea behind it. So it says in Pasuk Zayin, so they told Yosam what had happened. So he went and he stood on the top of Har Gerizim. Har Gerizim again was a Samaritan mountain. It was a cursed mountain, so to speak, even though it was really a good mountain.
The Torah?
Yes, it is. Har Gerizim and Har Evel, the way to remember it, Gerizim is good, Gid for good, and Evel is evil. That's the way to remember it, right? That the curses were on Har Evel, the brachos were on Har Gerizim, but Chazal tell us that really Har Gerizim was worse. Why was Har Gerizim worse? Because the people on Har Evel faced Har Gerizim when they were being cursed by the Levim who were down in the middle in the valley. So therefore, Har Gerizim is where all the curses actually went. Either way, Ba'isakolo Ba'yikra, he raised his voice, he called out Rav Yom Elohim, and he said to them, Shimu Elai Ba'al Ishkan, listen to me, people of Ishkan, Ba'yishma Elohim Elohim, and maybe may God listen to you as well. Now, there's going to be a lot over here that it's possible like this. It's possible that this whole time he's going to be speaking sarcastically. It could be that he's being dan l'chav schos the entire time. I can't tell you which one is more correct, whether he's being dan l'chav schos or if he's doing something different. But let's assume that he's being dan l'chav schos. That's how we'll try to understand this. Halo cholchua itim l'mshoach alein melech. The trees went to anoint for themselves a king. Vayomer l'zayis molcha aleinu. We want you to rule over us. They said to the olives. Vayomer l'hem hazayis, and the olive tree said to them, how healthy is this nation should be? Am I going to lose all of my oil that I have? Right, by me, God and other men are honored. You want me to rule over the trees? I can't. So this is the idea. Some say that he gave the marshal because it was clear, and he wanted to give an example of what Abimelech was like, and he's going to call Abimelech a thorn bush. But the first is an oil. The best person to become a king is someone from a respected family. Because even if he makes mistakes, the people are going to remain loyal to him because they believe in his family. He's got a good family, he's got good people there, and because of his family roots, he's going to be the most dedicated to the interests of the nation. He'll be able to sacrifice the most in order for the nation to work. Something that his parents went through, his grandparents started. It's like somebody owns a business. If your great-grandparents started the business, he'll do anything to keep the business in the family. That's the idea behind it.
What about Shaul?
Shaul HaMelech is in, what do you mean?
Like, his family.
because he was from Binyamin?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Shaul himself came from Shimon ben Gera, so it wasn't a bad family. Shimon ben Gera, we know, did things wrong, you know, later on to David.
I mean, we know David Shaul
was from Shimon ben Gera. I'm sorry,
family.
But Shaul Melech comes from, was five generations removed from Binyamin. I mean, it wasn't that bad. I said Shimon ben Gera was another line of family, I think of Mordechai. But he wasn't a bad guy. We all say that a Melech has to have a Kupa Shel Shrotzen totally behind him. In other words, there's got to be something wrong with the family somewhere so he doesn't have so much Gaiva. I agree with that. There should be something wrong at some point in the family, but he still has to have a respected, well-known family, so it's like that. But the Aleph said, I don't want to move. I just don't want to go. It's inconvenient for me to be able to go. I'd rather do my work, you know, by myself. So the tree said to the fig tree, so how about you? You should be king over us. And the fig tree said, I'm going to remove my sweetness and all of my fatness, which is so good, and I'm going to be in charge. The fig tree represents a person who has a lot of money. Okay, a person with a lot of money is good because he can provide for the needs of the nation. He can probably help the economic resources of the nation, be able to help them in that way. There's a tremendous amount that a king could definitely do if he's very, very rich. And the fig tree represents that very, very well, because a fig tree, its fruits ripen continually. So there's always a fig available at all times. So whenever you're hungry, you can always go to a fig tree. There's always something that happens, you know, with that fig tree, and that always works. So, but the fig tree still, it says, like, I don't want to lose my wealth for the needs of the people. That's just too much for me. I'd rather that not happen. So I don't want that. But it said to the grape tree, how about you? But the Geffen said, again, I don't want to lose my wine. It makes everybody happy if I go rule over the trees. The grapes, the wine represents a wise man. That's what it's supposed to represent. And that's the idea, that when drunk in moderation, right, wine can enhance the senses and can allow everybody to bring great joy to the entire nation. That's what it should be if used correctly. Others say that the olive tree is Osniel ben Kenaz, the fig tree is Devorah, and the grapevine is Gidon, right? And each one is representative of them in different ways. So the trees all said to the thorn bush, Lecha tol melech aleinu, so you should be king over us. The thorn bush said to the trees, if you really are treating me as the king, come sit in my shade. Obviously a thorn bush doesn't have any shade. And the thorn bush is saying, like, I'll give you what I can. I can give you a little bit. I'd have the ability. But if you're being sarcastic with me, if you're joking, then a fire should come out from me and consume all of you. Right? That's the idea behind it. So it could be that it actually was sincere, and that's the idea. Thornbush obviously has no pleasure. There's nothing good that you can do with that day, except maybe make a fence and stuff like that. And clearly he's referring to Abimelech as a thornbush, and saying that you, Abimelech, are a pure thornbush, that you have no good qualities in that way. That's what he's trying to say over here. Puzzle Tez Zion. The Asahim, the end is with some of us. If you guys have done this in truth and perfection, says Yosam, but I'm legal as having metal being told about season, if you've done well in you revolving Bezo, if you did this because you wanted to do a favor for Gidon, thinking, well, you have to low, and you're doing what, you know, was good for him. I shall Nilcham Abi Alecha, my father fought for you, remember? But Yashal Snachami Neged, and he threw his soul, he was most nefesh for you, but Yashal Snachami Admin, and he saved you from many. But Yashal, come to Mobi Zavi, you got it from my father's house, Yom, but Targo was born of Shiv Mish, you killed 70 men that day. This day, Alavin Achaz and one stone. But Tamlichu was Abimelech ben Amoso, and you made king Abimelech the son of his maidservant Al Balisham Kiachichamu because he's your brother. In the emes of his samasiyim, if you really did this in truth, and you were Balvin Beis Vayomazeh, so Simchu Abimelech, Yismach Kamu Bachem, then you guys should be happy with one another. Bimayin, but if you didn't do it in a good way, then you should know Teiteish Abimelech and Solchos Balisham. There will be a fire that leaves Abimelech and consumes the people of Shem as Beis Milo. Teiteish Mi Balisham and Beis Milo Vatolchos Abimelech. And that will happen. That a fire will come out from Shem and it will consume Abimelech. Meaning, if you're really choosing it for the right way, good, great, then everything should be good. And I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt and it should be good. But if not, then I'll know. Because you guys are going to start arguments and you guys are going to fight against each other and it's going to be much, much worse very, very quickly. But Yamas Yosam Yivrach. Yosam ran. He ran away. And he went to a city called Be'er. He was afraid of Abimelech, his brother. But Yostar Abimelech Yisrael Sholshanim. Notice, it does not say by Yishbot. It doesn't say by Yimloch. In Pasuk Chav Beis, it says by Yostar, he ruled over them for his own benefit. He didn't protect them, he didn't try to help or guide them, he did nothing else, yes.
The Targum says, Umlach Abimelech.
Well, that's the idea that he ruled over, maybe the word for by Yostar is that, but the fact that in Hebrew it does not say by Yimloch or by Yishbot, the fact that we choose that, the by Yostar is a different level, and that's the idea behind it. It says by Yishalachim Ruach Ro, Ben Abimelech, Ben Balishchem, there was an evil spirit. Evil discord that went between Abimelech and Baal HaShem, as Yosem said there would. Ha'yivkidu Baal HaShem ba'Abimelech, and they fought. They rebelled. Levo chamas shivim b'nei rubav adam al-musum al-Abimelech, to give vengeance and violence for the 70 sons of Yerubal, and their blood was placed on Abimelech's head. Achiyam, Asher Harugosam, who had killed them, Baal HaShem, Asher Chizkos, Yodav al-Arugas Chachiv, who helped him kill his brothers. That's the idea behind it, and that's what this obviously ended up happening because of them. Again, he got 3 years because of Gidon, that Gidon refused the Malucha, but he wasn't able to keep up wrong. They set up ambushes on the tops of the mountains. They were stealing from everybody who was going by in the paths, and they told Abimelech. The fact was, they really were waiting for Abimelech to walk by. They're waiting for Abimelech, and Abimelech came by, they were going to kill him. But while they were there, they robbed everyone who walked by. Because what the heck? I mean, they weren't afraid of anybody. They weren't afraid of anybody at all. So that didn't bother them at all. So it was right around that area. By the way, here is where Abimelech eventually is killed. Shechem is right there. Yosam fled that way, toward the west, toward the Mediterranean.
It's crazy. He had such a good name.
Yosam. Oh, Abimelech. Hi, named after a goy. Vayavo Gal ben Eved. Gal, the son of Eved Be'achov, and his brothers got up. Gal literally means a piece of dung. Vayavo b'shechem. They passed by Shechem. But Yitzhak Bo Baal HaShem, the Baal HaShem promised him that they would be with him now. But Yitzhak suddenly went out to the field, but Yitzhak was Karmayim, and they started to harvest their fields. They weren't afraid anymore of Abimelech. They were afraid up until this point that Abimelech was going to kill them when they went out to their fields. But now that Gal was in charge, Gal was protecting them, they weren't worried about Abimelech anymore. But Yitzhak, who passed Ruben, they stamped their wine, they made their wine, and they made parties. They went to their gods. But Yitzhak, Yishtob, Yikalo was Abimelech. They ate, they drank, and they cursed out Abimelech. But Himar Gal ben Eved, Mi Abimelech, Mishchem, Kinabdenu. Who is Abimelech and who is Shechem, the owner of this original city? Kinabdenu, we should serve him. Ben Yerubal Zvul Pekido, the son of Yerubal Zvul is Pekid, the guy who's in charge over here. Ivdu Azanche Chamor Abi Shechem, they serve Chamor, the people of Shechem, the father of Shechem. Madu Anabdenu Anach, and we're not going to serve the same. This is all sarcastic. Who would give these people into my hands? Vasiras Abimelech, and I would kill, I would remove Abimelech. And he said to Abimelech, raise up an army, come and fight us. I mean, he was drunk, so he got up and he said it out loud. I'm sure that impressed the people very much. Zvul, the officer of the city, heard what Gal ben Eved was saying, and he got very angry. He sent messengers to Abimelech and Soma, saying, they're ambushing the city on you. They're waiting for you. Get up tonight, you and the people that are with you, and ambush them in the field. In the morning, when the sun is up, Tashkim, you should get up early. All year and spread out to the city. They'll come to you. It's a good night to be able to kill them. I mean, they were partying and drunk all night long, which meant they were going to wake up in the morning with a tremendous headache. It's a good night to be able to go. It's time to go and fight them. Okay, we'll end with these. In Pasuk Lamed Dalet, they got up in the middle of the night. They ambushed Shechem with four different heads. He stood by the door of the gate of the city. He told me to Marav, and Abimelech and the people were with him. They came up from the ambush. But yeah, Gal saw the people. But Yomel Zvul, he said to Zvul, "Hine am yorid mirash harem." Isn't that a people coming down from the mountains? Very loves Zvul. And Sela Arm at the Ruach Anoshim. Wow, you're so afraid of them. You're seeing shadows, and you're pretending they're men. But Yosef Gal Vadaber, and he spoke again. Hine am yorid miim tapur aoritz. I see people coming from the middle of the land. Barosh echad bami derek elom maonanim. I see other people coming from the tree of maonanim. I see people going around there. But Yomer loves Zvul. Aye Evo Picha Shatomer Mi Abimelech Ki Abdenu. Where is your mouth now? You said, "Who is Abimelech that we should serve him?" Hello, Zel Amasher Masabo. Isn't this the people that you despised? Say no, I'll tell you welcome. Go fight them now. They take all the name Balish Chambi. You welcome Abimelech. So he went out. He fought against Abimelech. But you're to say, "What Abimelech?" But Yamas Mipanov. So Abimelech chased after him. They ran away from him. Right? But Yiblu Chalolim Rabban Tetz Chashar. Zvul, who was in charge of the city, closed the gates behind them and said, "Bye, guys." Gal had no way back in, so they all died by the gate. They had no escape. So Abimelech then went back to a city called Aruma. Zvul did not allow Gal and his brothers to live in Shechem. They ran. Some of the people that survived, they ran away. They were never heard from ever again. There was nothing left. All right, we're up to Pasuk Mem Beis. Days of Parak Tet. That's what we'll stop with over here. We have to finish off this Parak.